It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is 2 minutes past the hour on this, the fifth day of July, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that is where you go if you would like to become part of the madcap multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be among the wacky, merry, zany participants. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Barkway and Dwayne and Jug of Punch and Laborman and Lizardo and Squeaky and VT Blom, and capably moderated by Midweek Utility Chat Room Moderator Steve from Georgistan and Texas Betsy making a midweek appearance in the chat room as well. So jump right in. The conversation is fine. We have a grand time as long as we're not having to deal with... I hate autoplay. Jesus, now I got to go find where that's coming from. But we have a grand time each and every evening. So, like I said, hop right in. The conversation is fine. Ah, come on. Ah, come on. Dwayne says that it's showtime is going to take some getting used to. Yeah, look, I'm just having a little fun. Just mixing it up a little bit. So, that's why that's there. I guess that's a vote against it's showtime. I just thought it'd be nice just to have a little something different in there in the mix for, you know, for a change. Yeah, oh, well. We'll see. Maybe it'll... what's wrong with it's showtime? Anyway, doesn't really matter. We are at the middle of the week. And, of course, you know what that means. You know that it's Wednesday, like I said, the fifth day of July, 2017, and the long 4th of July holiday is, I guess, finally over. We can sort of get back to things, right? Program note. This is the last three-hour program for the week. Tomorrow night and Friday, the program will knock off at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time instead of 9, because I will then turn around and retool and reboot and re-everything else so that I can go forward and be ready and rocking to sit down and sub for Mike and Kathy, the Mike Malloy program at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Thursday and Friday. So I hope you'll I hope you'll join in that as well. So there will actually be 4 hours due. And I hope Mike and Kathy are having a wonderful holiday break. And we'll have some conversation. Dad, we'll just see. We'll see where it takes it. Yeah. So, there's that. Secondly, because, just another reminder, you know, even though I've mentioned it all, I will have mentioned it all 5 nights this week, at some point in time, I will get an email next week saying, Bob, why aren't you on air? I'm not on air next week because I'm going to Washington, D.C. As I mentioned at somewhat greater length, well, okay, same length, whatever. There is a meeting at the National Institutes of Health next week regarding the status of research and reporting on health data where mountaintop removal is concerned. Oh, great. I really don't know why this is happening. Well, those are both good. Stand by, please. Okay, let's try this again. What a pain it took us. Because our primary internet connection is with Frontier Communications, our internet connection just took crap, and therefore I had to restart everything. But we're rolling again. It'll be back, I promise. It'll be back. And, yeah, here we go. People are realizing we're back. And since that's the case, it's really kind of hard to set up any real protocol for this. But generally speaking, if we have an internet hiccup, an internet burp, an internet what have you, otherwise known as a Frontier fail, because that's what it'll boil down to just about each and every time. If we have one of those, then chances are the best bet is to restart, give it about a minute or so, because that's usually how long it takes me to do with whatever it is I'm doing. And then restart whatever player you're using, and we should be okay. Yes, Anatole says you need to make a new interweb tube. I certainly do. And you know what else I need? Because I don't know if you're hearing it, but I'm hearing it. Usually it's pretty quiet in here. But during this time of year, because, it's not like we've got neighbors right on top of us. That's why I can do this program. I don't know if I could do this if we had people all around, but we don't. I need to do a little more work on soundproofing the studio. Can you guys hear the lawnmower outside? Not my lawnmower, neighbor's lawnmower. If you can't, that's good, and that means that some of the gizmos that are supposed to take some of the noise out are actually working. But I can hear it, and it's a little bit annoying. Okay, so, no, y'all can't hear the lawnmower. That's a win. Anyway, the National Institutes of Health are holding a review of, they announced a review of the mountaintop removal scientific research data couple of years back. They did that after a whole bunch of hell was raised by, among others, led by Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And Cold River Mountain Watch on Facebook, at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Follow at both Facebook and Twitter, please. There's good information. It's a good way to keep up with the absolute latest on mountaintop removal issues. But because Coal River Mountain Watch and the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign raised the issue vociferously, the National Institutes of Health declared that they were going to review all of the peer-reviewed Science Journal reporting on the health impacts of mountaintop removal. Well, there is there's a report next week coming, or not a report, but there is a gathering next week taking place in Washington, D.C. None of my colleagues in the 8 campaign can be there. So it falls to me to go. And that means I'll be gone Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and back, assuming, like the last time I went, that I don't have a blowout or something on the way back and have to swap out rental cars. I'll be back for Friday on the front porch a week from tomorrow. Well, the bad thing about this is that Coal River Mountain Watch, being the one group battling against mountaintop removal that actually lives and operates inside the sacrifice zone, in the shadow, no kidding, within the shadow of mountaintop removal operations, other organizations don't. None of them do. Coal River Mountain Watch is the only one. The point of the tip of the spear in that struggle, if you will. Well, broker than the Ten Commandments and poor as Job's turkey, but that's the way it is when you're a grassroots organization. All the highfalutin far flung dollars and the stuff that you have to measure with a calculator goes to the people who have, you know, $300,000 salaries. And of course, once you've got a $300,000 salary, you'd be out of your mind to actually live where the stuff that you're worried about is taking place, right? Sure. I mean, I guess that's the way they look at it. So everybody will have representatives there except Coal River Mountain Watch. I'm willing to go. And happy to go to actually try to protect the interests of people who live here and actually have to deal with the fallout, literally, from mountaintop removal. But Coal River Mountain Watch can't cover any of the costs. So I'm trying to put on a double fundraiser this week. Raise the usual week's amount of funding, and raise next week's funding as well. And that should enable me to get a crappy hotel room and rent a vehicle. Yogurt's pretty cheap, so, you know, that's not going to be a big deal. But in the middle of summer, crummy hotels in or near Washington, D.C. I mean, any hotel room in Washington, D.C., the cheapest one is $350. So I'll be staying out at Manassas, Virginia. I've already made the reservations. And just commuting in the 50 miles or so. But that's only if every day this week we can continue to raise this week's funds plus next week's. And I must say it is quite inspiring that we have managed to do that two nights in a row. We have a chance to make it three nights in a row this evening, thanks to John, who sent me an email earlier today. Just kicked in $200. There are so many reasons. Here's a short list. Your work, and of course Agnes's too, the Horn community, and after listening to Monday's podcast, the return of Jim. He's in fine form. Just for fun, I'll put up another $100 if the Horn community can dig deep enough during tonight's prayer meeting to come up with another $100. Let me know if the challenge is met, and I'll send you some more moolah. Thanks again for all you do. Peace, John. Thank you, John, more than I can adequately express in words as simple and insubstantial as what we have here. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, John. So we can meet three nights of this fundraising campaign if we can get $100 raised tonight. 1 to 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 8 at 12:50, 16 at 6 and a quarter, 32 at $3.13. And by God, we're going to take that rounded up half a penny, and we're putting it into this campaign, too. You better believe we are. Okay? The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And if you'd like to, because I noticed we've got one, count them, one. Every day, every broadcast day of the month, we need to have 13 $10 a month subscribers. And this day of the month, we have one. So we need 12 more subscribers. That would both fulfill John's challenge, if we could get 12 more $10 a month subscribers tonight. And it would mean that we had this day covered on the calendar. Because if we had 13 $100 a month subscribers every broadcast day, we'd have fundraising taken care of. Ha, how about that? Pretty cool, huh? So that's how it stands. We've got a hundred bucks to go this evening. Thank you, John, very kindly again for making that possible. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, then the mailing address for contributions is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And if you'd like to let me know in advance, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout. And that way he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck. And all he has to take with him is the nice handy piece of rebar that he uses for a walking stick in case he runs into the noble, exalted, grand, cyclops, dragon, wizard, Kleagle of the clan, who also picks up their mail at that same UPS store. Okay. All right. So that takes care of most of the housekeeping. I should note that Agnes will be here while I am not next week. I very much wish that she could go with me, but she insists on staying here to make sure that the reruns go. Mm-hmm. So she'll make sure that the rerun launches, and it'll probably be like last week's reruns, not this week's. She'll make sure that the rerun launches. She will also make sure that Dr. Bill is live. And Dr. Bill has been back live. He was live for his 3 days this week. And just as a matter of programming housekeeping, I'm going to start putting Dr. Bill's programs up on my account at Podbean. And so look for them there. Dr. Bill has been, well, because of a lot of the tech problems, Dr. Bill took a bit of a hiatus, and now he's back, and he is back in magnificent form. So, of course, you can always get his, his podcasts at whiterosesociety.org, and they'll soon be going up at, they'll soon be going up at Podbean as well, podbean.com. Okay, let me check something tech-wise. Okay, I'll have an answer to that in a minute. All right, then. That does take care of the housekeeping. Oh, goody. The dirt bike's up and running this evening. Oh, well. Okay, thank you for letting me know. Clarity says there's no ambient noise on your microphone except you're hollering. Well, and that's all that there should be. So hopefully the dirt bike next door isn't coming through either. Although I must say that's a pretty darn fine impression of a nasty little dirt bike next door. Okay. Well, all right. With that, with all of that taken care of, as noted, it is the middle of the week. It's the fifth day of July. It's Wednesday. Downhill to Friday. Hump day. The day before Thursday. But here, and for yea verily lo, many years, this day has been special at the Horn because that means it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. On Brethren and Sistren. Brethren and Sistren. It had been a while since the little old blue-haired ladies had assayed a good pot of chicken and dumplings. But they did this evening. And they got the great big pot that they boiled the chicken in. They seasoned it up, black pepper, garlic, onion, celery, things like that. They made the dumplings. They dropped them in the boiling broth. Covered them up, sealed them, let them steam real good. Oh, my heavenly days, they were beautiful. Oh, and I'm told they were so tasty. Me, I had some, I guess you could say, chicken broth flavored yogurt. But in my honor, the little old blue-haired ladies there in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, they made up a big batch of carrot and raisin salad. I tried a little bit of that, you know, with a big dollop of yogurt on it. It's pretty darn good. Tasty. So there was carrot and raisin salad with a little bit of celery and a little bit of pineapple, a few little pieces of ground-up pecan. Mm-hmm. There were the chicken and dumplings. There was there were green beans. Mm-hmm. They're beginning to come in the garden, you know, and my, oh my, but they're wonderful when they're fresh. Mm-hmm. Green beans and the corn's beginning to come in too. They took ears of corn, microwaved them, stripped the kernels off the cobs, served them up with a little bit of butter and Old Bay seasoning. It was mighty. Mighty fine. And then, just because they hadn't done it in a while, they made that sort of imitation cheesecake that you do with the cream cheese and the lemon jello on a graham cracker crust. And I got to say, it must have gone over pretty doggone good with the deacons because they fell on it with a will. And the little youngins, there wasn't so much as a crumb, a graham cracker left for them. Serving once again as a reminder that if they really want to enjoy their dessert, they're going to have to study hard so that they can become deacons when they get to be all growed up. Then after the chicken and dumplings were done, and all the trimmings and the dessert and the coffee and the great big coffee samovar, and the quarts upon gallons of iced tea had been consumed, the deacons trundled their massive bulk up a couple of flights of stairs and wandered out to smoke with the sinners, as they always do, in the parking lot, trying to take care of their nicotine problem in order to be sound enough to make it through 3 hours, well, now 2.5, of live broadcasting from the pulpit. But it wasn't long. Sister Carol Baker usually lets them get a good 3 or 4 chain-smoked cigarettes in before she appears at the vestibule door with the solar-powered cattle prod just a-crackling. I neglected to mention the crackling cornbread that we had this evening. I had a little tiny taste of that, too. Hope it doesn't make my liver quiver, because it was mighty good with those cracklings mixed in. You know what cracklings are, they're like chopped up pieces of flash-fried pork skin. And they threw in some of the corn, too, that they'd stripped off the cob. Oh, it made it good. It was so good. But anyway, they chain smoked their cigarettes. Sister Carol showed up there at the vestibule with the crackling. That's what reminded me, the crackling cattle prod, and merely the sight of it fills the deacons with a sense of purpose that no religious dogma really can. And so they put flight to their heels and blew right past Sister Carol, shot through the vestibule, ran right past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, and wound up down front where they are now standing, brethren and sistren, where they are now standing with the great big heavy brass velvet-lined, burgundy blood-red velvet-lined offering plates with a little PayPal button in the bottom of them, getting ready as we prepare for the offertory hymn, getting ready to pass it amongst the congregation, which they will do quick as I give the nod and nudge and the wink. So with every head bowed and every eye closed, except for the one that you keep squinted open just a little bit to keep your neighbor from whacking you in the head with the offering plate, because that hurts, I'm going to call the minister of music up and ask him to lead us in our offertory hymn. So once again, and I'm not going to lock the doors, because y'all showed me what happens when I do that, and the cleaning bill was terrible, and it just about can't get ServPro in anymore after that. No, we're just going to pass the plate while we do the hymn, and hopefully it'll come back with $100 in it. And if it does, then Brother John's challenge will have been met. So, fingers crossed. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. the fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around!
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around!
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, mares-y dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Hot glory on the horn. Amen. Hallelujah. Oh, brethren and sister, and I tell you what, we got a big evening here. We got a big evening here for you, of praise, and wonderment, and tales of heroic faith among the religiously faithful. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So, brethren and sister, and I'm calling on you. Help! Glory, amen, to get up out of your seats and onto your feet and wiggle and waddle and scrunch and scrunch and squeech and don't stick anything not particularly neighborly in the face of any of your fellow members of the congregation. There as you come on, and then I want you to come on down that blood red aisle and fall on your knees at the altar. And lay your hands, glory, amen, upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you, amen, from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Bob Kincaid, and ho, glorious guru. And this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Brethren and sisters, I am so glad that you are all here with, and that we are together in fellowship. In this early July, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Brethren and sister, one of the leading faith one of the leading members of the faith community speaking out to African American congregations in the country is, of course, Jesse Lee Peterson. And he is doing all he can to advance the work of Christ Jesus in attacking people for how they love each other. Yes. And attacking people for where they come from. Because that's what Jesus would do, you see. Jesus didn't like no immigrants. And Jesus didn't like no homosexuals. Because it says it right there. It says it right there in the third chapter of Flip-Floppians. Verse 7-11. And behold, he did look upon people and said, yea, verily, I ain't sure how you love each other, but I want to make sure that you ain't loving each other in a way that the God that made you to love each other that way made you. So behold, be gone from me, ye homosexuals and drag queens and lesbians and asexuals, for in my eyesight, the only good are the heterosexuals. It says it right there in Flip-Floppians, and they ain't no getting around it. And by the way, if y'all ain't from around here, and this is verse 11, if y'all ain't from around here, get thee unto the eternal lake of fire, which my daddy done made for the devil, not that devil, the big devil, the one with the cloven hooves and the horns and the tail, and for the devil and his angels. Go on now, get. Says it right there. The only problem being that the book of Flip-Floppians, brother and sister, don't exist. Because you see, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi never said anything of the sort. But that does not stop leading African-American evangelical Jesse Lee Peterson from warning folks about how much Jesus despises immigrants and homosexuals. You understand? Pay attention now. Hey, you there, youngins. Quit fooling around inside the hymnals. Now you stop that. Stop trying to find the dirty words in the hymns. Y'all know where they are already, and you know we don't sing them no more. Hey, you over there. Close that Bible. Last thing in the world we need you doing around here is reading the Bible. I know you like to go to Genesis and read about what a pervert Lot's daughters was. I done heard about what y'all do out behind the sanctuary. They just put them down and pay attention. If you need to know it, I'll tell you. Now you listen to the words of Reverend upstanding minister, brother, Pastor Jesse Lee Peterson. You listen up real good.
I never would have thought that this great country would have a president like Barack Obama. The worst of the worst. He will and is going down in history as the most hated, worst, weak, pathetic, Pope, pitiful excuse of a president and of a man. Who would have thought they voted this guy in who almost destroyed the country and brought it right at the brink of destruction? And then God said, hold up. Not going to let this happen. Where is Trump? He was like, Jesus, go over there and talk to Trump and tell him I need him to do something for me. And the son said, okay, Dad. Or daddy, I would go and talk to Trump.
Now, see, that's why I made up the book of Flip-Floppians a minute ago. Because if Jesse Lee Peterson, a man of God and a Christian, who, when he dies, is going to go and have pie in the sky, you know, with a little baby Jesus, If he can just make up errant bullshit like that, well, there's nothing to stop me. Hey, except for the fact that the part in there about Lot and his daughters being nasty, filthy, pervy girls. Hey, Tanner? Yeah, Tammy? Let's get Daddy all liquored up, because seeing as how his God's done destroyed our city and everything, we ain't never going to get husbands, and that means we ain't never going to have babies. So let's get Daddy liquored up and fuck him real good so we can get pregnant by our own daddy, because God loves him. Let's do that. That's a good idea, Tanner. I'm glad you like it, Tammy. Because, see, that really is in the Bible. And, I mean, look, whatever floats your boat. Long as there's consent involved and everybody knows what's going on, you know, including the goat. Well, no, the goat really can't consent, can it? So the goat is definitely out. But as long as everybody's consenting and nobody's getting hurt that doesn't want to be, cool. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. Lot wasn't able to consent because Lot was stinking drunk and passed out. I guess we could say that it was a miracle of Almighty God that they managed to work him up to a righteous enough stiffy that his daughters could get on there and go for a little pony ride. And apparently there was some work involved because they could only do it. Only one daughter of Lot could do that one night. They had to do it to him. They had to rape him again the next night so that the other daughter could do it. And then they both got all pregnant. And in 500 years later, Paul, whose name was really Saul, but he was on the lam and trying to keep it. But anyway, he said that Lot was beloved of God. Because he was a righteous man. Listen, don't be getting it in your head that you can get raped by your daughters and still call yourself a righteous man in the modern world. Okay, just quit that. But you know, you got Jesse Lee Peterson here just making shit up. God said, "Where's Trump?" And the boy said, "I go find him, Daddy." Now, we don't know if this is pre-crucifixion Jebus or post-crucifixion Jebus, because that, you know, they kind of exist outside time and space and whirling vortex thingy. So, you know, it might have been little boy Jesus in his spaceman spiff footy pajamas. Who knows? But that's how, you know, let's get back to it. God, he's disgusting.
And now the president is making America great again. Why won't Hillary Clinton go away? She keep coming back like she is important.
No. She keep coming back like she is going to run for president in 2020, which she is going to do. I mean, I know there's people out there that will piss off supremely. I'm not responsible for what happens when I put on the frayed purple robe with the tattered appliqué moons and stars and the shredded cuffs and the "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front of it, and the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that always reads "Answer hazy, ask again later." I'm not responsible for what happens. I am merely the vessel through which the prophecy comes, you understand? I don't want her to run in 2020. I don't even think there's a whole lot of pundits out there that think that would be a good idea. But that is just the prophetic vision that I have been given. Because she hasn't said she won't. And as long as she has not unequivocally stated that she won't, then that means there is a pretty decent chance that she will. Because it's still her turn. So I just want you to know where that prophesying's come from. But that's where it is. By the way, technical note, brethren and sistren, I've had a communication from Deacon Ben Birch to let me know that the White Rose Society stream is sending as well. I also at almost the same time, like it was a miracle or something. I also got a note from Midweek Utility Chat Room moderator Steve from Georgistan letting me know that the White Rose Society stream was back up as well. Okay, so thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Ben Birch. All right, back to Brother Jesse Lee Peterson. Yuck.
Why won't she go away? She keep going down into the pits of hell, sucking the blood out of the dead, and coming back trying to hold on.
And the Hilarians thought that the Bernie Bros were mean. Jesus, pits of hell, sucking the blood out of the dead? Who knew the dead had blood? Woo! Of course, Jesse Lee always sounds like he's a little bit liquored up. So that's always a possibility in this situation.
Hillary, nasty Clinton. That is an evil, evil, nasty, dirty woman. Evil, nasty, rotten Clinton. Hillary. That's evil. Thank God she did not win as president. Can you imagine what we would be doing and saying today had that evil, nasty, dirty, wicked woman had won? Especially coming from the fallen Messiah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, Becky, look at her butt. Can you imagine what he would be saying if Hillary Clinton had been elected president? It doesn't take much imagination, brethren and sistren. I know exactly what he'd be saying if Hillary Clinton had been elected president. Impeach her! Benghazi! Woo! Oh, Comet Ping Pong Pizza! Impeach her! God, impeach her! The flag's falling! The republic's crumbling! Woo! Jesus! Impeach her! Oh, her emails! Oh! That's what he'd be saying. Had Hillary Clinton actually been elected president, which would have been manifestly better for this nation than, you know, where we are now, where we all just kind of breathe a sigh of relief while we know that Marmalade Mugabe's in the air on his way to Poland. We can at least breathe a sigh of relief that he isn't screwing anything up yet. Although, pay attention on this trip, because it was not necessary. Okay, so the G20 meeting is in Hamburg, Germany. A lovely green city, by the way. Just for the sake of geography, and I know most of the Horn Family Community Congregation knows this, but for the lurking little right-wing jackasses and stuff, hi, brain, who wander by from time to time. Just so you'll know, it is not necessary to go to Poland to get to Hamburg, Germany. Okay? Just not. Not necessary. But he's going to Poland because the ruling party in Poland is very much a Trumpansy-style government. It is right-wing, nationalistic, has fascist tendencies, despises immigrants, especially, you know, when they're Muslims, and has a long history of reverence for the right wing in America. They've got a city square that they named after Ronald Reagan, for Christ's sakes. Mm-hmm. By the way, I got to share this, and it comes with one of these. Clarity pointing out, no. The Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson isn't all liquored up. He's just got something. He's just got something stuck in the back of the throat. Not drunk, just a slightly modified by God glottis, probably from opening the sacramental wine with his pharynx. You think that was what he was doing with his pharynx? There's lots of stuff you can do with the pharynx, some of which we're probably better off not talking about on this program. But hey, yeah. You know, you'd kind of hate to see what the Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, yeah, what he does on Saturday night, you know, down there in that part of town where you drive and say, you know, hey, kid, would you like to make $20 the hard way? Note coming in from Michael in Madison. So Uncle Ruckus got himself some dementia and his very own megachurch radio show? Why, yes, Brother Michael. As a matter of fact, Uncle Ruckus did. The Reverend Uncle Ruckus. Well played, sir. Well played, Uncle Ruckus. Very good. But just a heads up, they're saying the right wing in Poland is going nuts. They're so excited to see the Tangerine Tiberius that they can't hardly stand themselves. They're bussing in people to praise him and I don't know, offer up little babies for him to kiss, even though he despises babies. He said so himself. Like they did down in Mobile, Alabama during the campaign when that woman, with a state of rapture upon her face, held her baby up as if she, if he'd have kissed it, slapped it, or just taken it and passed it off to the Secret Service detail, it would have been fine by her either way. I mean, all you got to do is find the picture. You understand what I mean? And so the right wingers in Poland, otherwise known as fascists, are saying this is going to be a speech that will be remembered in the same light as John Kennedy's Ich bin ein Berliner speech of more than 50 years ago. I don't think on his best day with God sticking his hand up Donald Trump and moving his mouth for him, I don't think Donald Trump could deliver a speech that is even in the same hemisphere as the Ich bin ein Berliner speech, or even with John F. Kennedy saying, "I wonder what's for dinner." Right? But that's what they're saying. So, pay attention. Odds are, it's going to be horribly, terribly embarrassing. But that's why he's Trump. He is our national 25th Amendment embarrassment, unable to perform the duties of his office. Okay? Oh, dear God. Barclay tells me Anna Maria Anders, Polish Secretary of State, is an old friend of mine. Our sons were born a week apart and we're childhood playmates. She's meeting with Trump in her official capacity when he hits Poland today or tomorrow. That poor woman. That poor woman. And by the way, note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa, who says of Jesse Lee Peterson, "Didn't these filthy fucking pigs tell us we all have to tone the language down? Well, that doesn't apply if you're a servant of the Almighty merely speaking truth to the heathen, sinful nation. Then you can talk about Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or anybody's mama any old way you want to, because Jeebus, right?
According to Truth We Vote, Hillary spoke at the American Library Association.
The horror.
And Hillary said, kids who read Harry Potter are more open to immigrants and LGBT people, those who read Harry Potter. And if that's true, stop your children from reading Harry Potter. And if it's true that reading Harry Potter causes kids to be more open, to become more open to immigrants and LGBT people, then you're going to pay for brainwashing, traumatizing, turning your children away from good toward evil. I would shut down those books right away if that's true.
And you know he would. Because Jesse Lee Peterson is a theocratic fascist, just like the rest of the modern-day upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, God-fearing, fundamentalist amosexuals. He would ban books. There is an admission, okay? And see, when he comes wandering in, hi, Reverend Jesse Lee, how are you? I'm just fine. How are you, Brother Deacon, Pastor, Brother Minister, Pope, Bishop, Archbishop, Cardinal, whatever, Maximum Shepherd, what's for lunch? Because he's just another Christian. And the so-called good Christians won't denounce him. Hey, I know. Midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan says this old boy sounds like he's been beaten the head one too many times. I think, perhaps kicked by a recalcitrant mule, or you know, just good and drunk. I've still got a small wager on just spends the day all liquored up. Cause you know when you've got the angels singing in your noggin the way Jesse Lee Peterson does, sometimes the only way to get them to quieten down a little bit is a little blast of the old panther piss. Settles them right down every time. But at least, but the value in that, okay, yes, of course, there's the typical not to be missed, no surprise at all, hatred for immigrants and, you know, people who love each other differently than Jesse Lee Peterson thinks, right, that's to be expected, that's who they are, that they are who we thought they were who we thought they are, it, right. But there's a little bit of a surprise that that one of their number will actively admit. Nah, it's not that surprising, but it's at least evidence that they will admit that they would ban books, which means that they are in fact theofascists, theocratic fascists. Ron in Raleigh asks, hey, Bob, you think Mein Kampf would be on his reading list? Well, maybe not Mein Kampf, but certainly Mein Drumpf. I'm giving myself a little cowbell for that. I'm getting downright libertine in my cowbell awards. As Clarity points out, that there is the Reverend is our version of the Orthodox type that threw Pussy Riot in prison and attacked him after release at the Winter Olympics. How long till he starts writing Sharia revisions, you know, with stonings and shootings, banned thinking? Well, it's not a matter of how long, Clarity. You're just not quite that familiar with Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. He's been there already for a very long, long time. Michael and Madison, ich habe zwei Jelly Donuts. To be fair, Trump gets to have two jelly donuts per meal. It works like scoops of ice cream. Everyone else who's ever dined in the White House, including JFK, only got ein jelly donut. So maybe he can mention that in Poland. Isn't there a donut called a Berliner? Ich habe ein Berliner. Genau. Ich habe zwei Berliner. Ja. Ich habe zwei Chili Donuts. Damn straight. From Brother Deacon Asa. Allow me, Bob. If reading Harry Potter leads to kids being more open-minded towards LGBT people, what does listening to Jesse Lee Peterson do to those poor kids' brains? Encephalopathy? Something like it. You know, teach your children well, right? It starts in the home. You get them hating early. You get them hating early. And the hate sticks. Texas Betsy says, why are you spending so much time on this guy? This is why I rarely listen anymore. Well, Betsy, because this guy is America. This guy is what's in power. This guy is the problem. Trump is the symptom. This guy is the problem. And of course, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, so that's why we focus on this sort of thing. Now you'll notice that Jesse Lee Peterson despises immigrants. That's not unique or specific to Jesse Lee Peterson. All of these Christians seem to forget the admonitions about how we treat strangers among us that is to be found in more than one or two or three places in their Bible. For we were strangers in a strange land. Yeah, that's not Robert Heinlein, that's the Bible. Nonetheless, Sandy Rios of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippistan. She was a speaker at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR, which is not the same as Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Apparently, you cannot copyright an acronym. And they had a big old radio row in Washington, D.C. recently. And literally dozens of right-wing hate broadcasters showed up to give voice to the small army of anti-immigrant white-wingers because they had the money to do that. What does our friend say? And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. And so interviewing the president of Federation for American Immigration Reform, Dan Stein, Stein, that's an old Algonquin name, Stein, and he's the head of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Yeah. No, she explained, Sandy Rios did, another one of those problems with all of them damned immigrants. Yeah.
We're going through his list of promises.
Right, these are things
just to
he
go
promised.
Back. Yeah.
And then he also said we were going to move back toward a merit-based immigration so we don't have so many poor immigrants coming getting on the dole right away. I mean, we have a 19th century immigration program and a 21st century post-industrial economic superpower, hopefully still. And like we're bringing in so many people who don't have the education and earning power to, if you will, they become a net cost to society just by virtue of their poor earning power. And like historically, going all the way back to Massachusetts, 1685, you don't bring in people who don't have the earning ability to carry their weight, okay? And yet this has been a cheap labor. The big problem is you see in the Congress, the Republicans are squishy. Now, why is that? Because these big Wall Street cheap labor donors putting pressure on who's going to pick the onions, who's going to do the dishes, or the engineers. I mean, they use foreign labor.
Who's going to clean our houses? Who's going to do our yard work? Yeah.
Isn't it interesting how bleach blonde white lady Sandy Rios can jump right in there? On the one hand, Dan Stein is talking about these cheap labor Wall Street blah blah blahs who want people to pick the onions and apparently wants them to pick engineers too, if you paid attention. But she immediately jumps in and says, "Who's going to do our yard work? Who's going to clean our houses?" Wonder who does Sandy Rios' yard work. You know, just wondering. I wonder why that was right there on the tip of her tongue. Don't you? Yeah, I do. And never mind the fact that the whole... Well, is there even one example? One. Uno. Ein. Unus. Is there even one example of some poor, beleaguered, Merkin citizen out there, preferably white, who is being denied access to the onion-picking job of his or her dreams? Because if there is, I'm kind of stumped. Sort of reminds me of this. This, you know, our onion picking problem goes back a long way, all the way into the reign of error.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them, you know."
You pluck them. This onion crisis persists now. In the past, we've had conversations with our friend Clarity up in the Great Northwest, who's told us about the vast onion estates where she is. I don't know, are the onions just rotten in the ground?
Who's going to pick the onions? Who's going to do the dishes, or the engineers? I mean, they use foreign labor.
Who's going to clean our houses? Who's going to do our yard work?
Yeah, to lower labor costs, to reduce labor costs, reduce wage pressure, and now the middle class has disappeared. And that's not surprisingly, the immigration issue is going to be dealt with one way or the other. Now it's either going to be dealt with responsibly and reasonably, or it's going to be, you know, decided in the streets because the public's going to get so frustrated with, you know, total inaction.
Is it just me, or is that sort of a threat of violence against the immigrant community? People are going to decide it in the streets because they're so frustrated. Well, once again, we've got another example of the right wing not doing such a very good job at toning down the violent rhetoric. Because that was an implicit threat.
But if they don't get their way, they will use their millions upon millions of tax-free dollars, and it's all tax-free, to send the aggrieved wannabe onion pickers and people who wash dishes and engineers into the streets to stand up for onion plucking justice. Yeah.
You know, Dan.
But I just want to add, as Sandy Rios will point out, the problems with these damned immigrants,
you know, total inaction
goes even deeper.
You know, Dan, I'm out and about a lot in different places geographically. I'm sure you are too. And there are, when you're in Washington, D.C., or if you're in, like, Dearborn, Michigan, or if you're in, I don't know, Orlando, Florida, Los Angeles, and I could go on. It's often like a third world country. I view Northern Virginia, D.C., it's amazing. It's just amazing. And then I go to other parts of the country, and it still looks like America. Nothing.
Let's be clear. If you have immigrants in your immediate vicinity, to Sandy Rios, who, by the way, because this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, is in fact, you know, a Christian, if you have immigrants in your communities, it doesn't look like America to Sandy Rios, because she wants Merkins out there doing the crap low-wage jobs that, you know, Merkins won't really, you know, do. She wants an America that looks like America, you know, where American black folks are doing the jobs that, well, they was brought here to do. There's always a nasty little seed of racism tucked away in their Christian love, isn't there? Yes. Meanwhile, Stephen, New York says, immigrants on the dole right away, huh? First of all, what in God's holy name is he blathering about? What in God's holy name is he blathering? The Lebowski reference, yes. And we've always got a cowbell for a Lebowski reference. I would love, says Steve, for these Christian Taliban Christians to live for one day in the skin of immigrants I know here, with their multiple jobs working 6 to 7 days per week and raising families. Second of all, have they heard of Emma Lazarus? Yeah, that sounds like one of them foreigner names. Yeah, they've heard of Emma Lazarus, and the ICE is out there looking for her to get her deported right quickly, like. Yeah, they've heard. Texas Betsy with an observation. Subject line, immigrants. Many, more than half, of my immigrant middle school kiddos or their parents have faced hatred just in the past year. And that is why we focus on people like Jesse Lee Peterson and Sandy Rios on Prayer Meeting Wednesday, because they are grade-A representatives of the dominant stream of Christianity that holds sway in this country. Betsy, the hatred that your students, innocent children, and their families have faced in the last year doesn't exist in a vacuum. It comes from somewhere. And this is the somewhere from whence it comes. And so by shining a light, making fun of them, pointing them out for the vicious, hypocritical fascists that they are, if one more person understands where the hate comes from, and God knows, although it's highly unlikely that many members of the immigrant community are listening to this program, if even one more immigrant understands who is fostering this hate, that it is the followers of Christ Jesus in this country that promulgates this hatred, then the purpose of what we do here is well served. Why should anyone be hated for wanting to be part of this country? I, for one, cannot understand. Well, okay, yeah, I can understand. If you're coming from Syria, if you're coming from Sudan, if you're coming from some war-ravaged hellscape on this little blue-green marble hurtling through the universe, maybe this place looks pretty good. But you don't see a flood tide of people trying to come to America from civilized countries. You know, countries a little further up the civilization scale from us. But there's just a little bit more left to Sandy Rios, and it's a dandy.
Has changed. English is heard, and things are running smoothly, and bathrooms are not. Listen, I'm being very in politic here, but as a female, I find, you know, bathrooms have just become unbearable because I think a lot of the people coming in just don't know basic hygiene, don't know how to handle modern amenities, and so. But for some of the country, it's not a reality. For those of us that live in the middle of it, we see the changes. And we're saying, no, we've got to control this. We've got to assimilate people. We have to teach them all kinds of things in order to make this work.
But, of course, she doesn't want to assimilate. She wants to deport, throw out, ban, prevent their arrival here in the first place. But, yes, look, it's an oldie but a goodie. What was it in the early days of that godforsaken disaster in the first half of the 20th century? Little good German school children were taught to say in their classrooms, "Something stinks in here. It smells like onions and garlic. I smell Jew." You don't even have to chuck a rock from that to hit what Sandy Rios just said. You know, they don't understand flush toilets. And, of course, all the people, and it's all tax-free, and all the people who listen go, well, you know, they probably come from somewhere that they just shit on the ground. You got to teach them how. Got to teach them how the potty works, and it's harder to potty train a grown up than it is a little one. Sure enough, and teaching the little ones is hard enough. Thank you for the affirmation. Midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan says, "Bob, I get Wednesdays. You're trying to point out that point A leads to B that leads to C, and that leads to Trump. It's as simple as connect the dots. If only. Well, it may be simple." But, you know what I mean. Meanwhile, I owe a cowbell to Robert in Australia. Going back to Jesse Lee Peterson for a moment. Subject line, how does that work? So, Jesse Lee Peterson reckons that Hillary has such power that she can go to hell anytime she wants so that she can suck the blood out of dead people. All caps, but she still can't win an election. How's that work? Asks Robert from Australia. Really can't tell you. I don't have that part sorted out. I really, really just don't. But that tremendous cosmic power, teeny tiny living space. I guess. Hey. Enough of this shilly-shallying about. And by the way, thanks to Betsy. We are halfway to meeting John's $100 challenge for this evening and finishing fundraising for this prayer meeting Wednesday. Now all we need is the other 50 bucks. 5 at 10, 10 at 5, etc. And we will have the problem solved. So let's not leave this challenge lying on the table. Please, please. And we will now run over to the Skype line and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob.
So are there lines around the block of aggrieved white potential onion pluckers up there? I mean, we've talked about the onion farms and stuff.
Oh, hell no, Bob. Hell no. And we have busloads of workers get their whatever they need when they get here. They go to the embassy and they give them their work visas, basically. And Oregon is a sanctuary state. We haven't had any ICE raids that I've heard of like they have in California. But, yeah, they're here. I mean, if they wanted to. But what I'm thinking now is as the summer progresses, they're going to move north and hit us in when the fruit harvests come. And the cherries have been hit a little bit this year. But I think they've been hit more because of the rents in the gorge where most of the cherries are grown, people just can't afford to live there. You can still get an apartment here for under $500 a month. So they're not nice, but, you know, compared to what you'd pay in Portland or Spokane or, Lord, Seattle's just out of control with their rents right now. But anyway, no, I haven't heard anything about that. The only thing I heard, remember we talked about trying to get melons out before the 4th of July.
Right, right.
My good friend said it's going to be another 2 weeks before they get theirs out to market. But we've got 3 days over 100 or around 100 degrees and 60 degree nights. So I think they should be real sweet when they do come on.
I'd imagine they will. And you know, speaking of which, and I guess this qualifies as a wandering over into food porn. I love watermelon. Oh, I do. And the sweeter, the better. And you know, down South Alabama, it was nothing when I was a kid. You'd be headed down to the beach, and there'd be a semi tractor trailer pulled over on the side of the road. Full of watermelons, and these were the long son of a guns too, the great big oblong, and they'd be a dime, and let's buy 10, but they were so sweet and so good, but of course they were full of seeds, and one thing I've noticed,
I like the seeded ones that have a better flavor myself.
Exactly, that's exactly where I was going, because I can't seem to find anything but these seedless watermelons in the grocery stores now, whether it be Kroger's or the Wiggling Pig. And the flavor, the sweetness, just isn't there, Clarity.
But guess what? They have to grow seeded melons to grow those seedless melons.
Well, you kind of do, don't you? I mean, I was actually, because I think about crazy stuff like that, too. It's kind of like, how do you get a new navel orange tree? Well, that's a product of grafting.
Yep, yeah.
But can you graft a watermelon vine?
No, it's a seed. It's a seed. And I haven't heard of any cloning going on yet. But yeah, they are hard to find even here in beautiful Hermiston melon country. You have to look for them and ask for them. But I know the family and they grow mostly seedless because that's what the market asks for. But they do grow some specialty. There's a couple different varieties that they grow and nobody else grows. And they're pretty much spoken for before they sell them. What do you call it? Market them. They pre-sell them. Futures. And they also, they ship melons up to Alaska and to Japan. So, and back to onions, I went to get my teeth cleaned Monday, and the young lady that was a hygienist had lived in China for a year with her mom's best friend's son. So who was an onion broker in Shantoy or something like that. So she had a place to live and just hang out. Anyway, that's all that they do is market fresh onions to China. And you were talking about China not being able to feed itself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's going to be a matter of who can afford what, you know. And we don't get the best cherries, you know, the big giant Bings go to Japan. Because they sell them for 50 cents a piece over there.
Dear God.
Yeah, 50 cents a cherry.
I just noticed that cherries are hitting the grocery stores around here. And if I was still in a drinking way, I would be thinking very seriously about rinsing and pitting and splitting some cherries and maybe pouring a bottle of really high-quality vodka over them and working me up some schnapps.
Okay. What are they marketing for there?
They're by the pound.
Yeah.
So, but I mean they come prepackaged in their own bags. You know, I'm not sure what the per pound price is, but I did buy a bag, and it came off at about $6.75 for about a plastic ventilated bag, about half full.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like they're probably about $3 a pound. Yeah, I've seen them as low as $2, and I've seen them as high at the, you know, the fancy market, $4.98 for the grade A premium.
Yeah, these were a little roughed up, but like I said, the thing that really grabbed my attention a couple of weeks ago were the cotton candy grapes.
Yeah, when I lived in Vallejo, you know, right there on the edge of wine country, the farmer's market there was just amazing, the variety of grapes that you could get fresh.
And I mean, these things, it was astonishing clarity. They really tasted, you bit into them, and it wasn't because they'd been flavored or injected or modified or plant physicist with a scanning electron microscope had turned a gene sideways or anything. They were, it was just a product of the plain old boring, plant husbandry.
Yeah.
And they came up with a really sweet, crispy white grape that when you bite into the damn thing tastes like cotton candy.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we've been doing viniculture now for pretty much since the Greeks, right? Mesopotamia.
I'd say Mesopotamia.
So we've been around grapes pretty much as almost as long as we've been around dogs.
Just about. I mean, look, the relationship between humans and grapes is kind of a fascinating one because, and it's the same thing with beer. We learned fermentation because if you're one of these fundamentalists that believes that, you know, like young earth creationism and God created all things, well then on individual grains of barley and on individual grapes, there always exist wild yeasts, Clarity.
Okay, yeah.
And if you leave a grape alone, a grape will begin to ferment because of those wild yeasts. And if
robins like to pick them up in the orchards and get drunk, yeah.
Yeah, get tanked. And and this, you know, the same thing. If you leave bread dough just to sit, it will funky up. And it'll begin to rise because the yeasts will begin to do what yeasts do. And somewhere along the way, and this is one of those things that, you know, you kind of fall in love with I fall in love with humanity this way. Some enterprising soul picked up that funky-smelling, rotten-ass barley water and took a big swig and didn't spit it out. And a couple of minutes later said, well, that wasn't the best-tasting stuff I ever had, but I think I'll have another. And a little while later, he's walking around, or she, I mean, let's not be sexist about this, is walking around going, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And somebody says, well, give me some. Well, I drank it all. Well, we got to make more. And like I mentioned last night, one of the first things that human beings do when they develop the idea of writing is, okay, so we got this new thing, and it's handy, and it helps us remember things that we might not always necessarily remember. For Christ's sakes, write down the recipe for beer. Because writing down the recipe for beer is one of the first things we ever did with writing.
Wow.
Writing evolves, you know, cuneiform. Writing develops as a means for the headman to figure out how much stuff he's got. And one of the first things he counted was, hey, how many great big dried clay amphora of beer do I have? It matters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having enough wine, because you couldn't always count on the water. Don't drink the water.
No, and back to the intestinal fauna, it was probably the probiotic got you, you know, adapted to the local bacteria and stuff in a way that was didn't attack your gut all at once.
Right. I mean, it's not like the Jordan River is the Mississippi. And you know, you got the Dead Sea down there, and it's real nasty, and it's not like you want to take a big swig out of that. And wells, you know, you could get shot, well, killed, not shot, for drinking from somebody else's well without permission. So if you've got...
Well, in the proverbial cisterns.
Yeah, for the not proverbial rain. So, I mean, these things, you know, they have a beautiful connection to our human experience.
Can I segue?
Absolutely.
I had a experience today. I use medical transportation to get to my appointments out of town, and the woman picked me up 20 minutes early. And think, I don't know how I was ready to go out the door because I was trying to impress my doctor. So I got there a half hour early for my appointment, and luckily there wasn't anybody there ahead of me, and I got right in and had my dermatology cut here map drawn out for her. She was really tickled about that. Cut this off, burn this off. And anyway, when I got out, the person that drove me there said, oh, I'm not picking you up. So I didn't know who the next person was to get me home. And as I was sitting there in the office, people came and went, and I heard these conversations going on. It was a mother and daughter was the first ones that came in, and they were talking about the grandkids, you know, all being off from school. And the daughter said, well, we got them home from the lake and nobody died.
Absolutely. Because you take your little victories where you can find them, Clarity.
Oh, exactly. And anyway, that conversation kind of came and went, and they left. And then two other people older than me came in, two couples, and they started talking about the local they're charging people that have cars an extra $20 for a bridge tax. And because they're rebuilding one of the bridges that runs between Richland and Pasco and Kennewick, 395. And so they're trying to speed that up. And then they were talking about, well, you know, they add this tax on, but they're not going to spend it all on the bridge. You know, they're spending it on highways. And isn't that why we pay gas tax? So that went. And then one of them said, well, I grew up in Montana, and, you know, all we paid was this tax. And then the other couple was from Oregon, and they were talking, well, we don't have sales tax. Oh, but you got that income tax. We don't have that. And, you know, and back and forth. And anyway, then they started talking about, well, if we could just get away from that school tax, you know, when you get to be a certain age, we shouldn't have to be paying for those schools. And they just keep tearing them down, you know, perfectly good schools. They tear them down and rebuild them. And then one of them pipes in, yeah, and they, you know, they don't have to have all that architecture. You know, just put a building there.
Just throw some blocks together on the ground. Never mind a floor. We can save money by having dirt floors. And I mean, it was good enough for the people that made America great 100 years ago, right?
Well, they got so much asthma that they should be eating more dirt, you know?
Jesus, these people.
Yeah, well, and anyway, the other thing, you know, it's just like the GOP playbook, because the local stations here are Fox, Fox, and Fox. And it's one of them says, yeah, the way they spend those taxes, you know, if they just do it like a household budget on their checkbook, on their budget, and the other one pipes in, yeah, if we lived like that, we'd be all out on the street. And I just sat there and watched, and it's just like, oh, I'm going to bite my lip. I'm not going to get into this because I'm kind of under the radar, and I don't want to get into more than I can handle here. But it's just like, that's the way these people, and I'm sure they probably all voted for Trump.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, the promised trifecta of great legislative accomplishments of Tangerine Tiberius were repeal Obamacare, reform taxation, which is another way of saying that if we don't give the rich a tax cut, they'll hold their breath until they turn blue or something. And then finally was going to be infrastructure reform, because once Bernie started talking about infrastructure in the recent, regrettably poor outcomed election cycle, then all of a sudden everybody else started talking about infrastructure. And we really do have infrastructure problems. And it's not just roads, it's not just bridges, it's everything. But when they get around to do, because there have been little hints here and there, Clarity, when they get around to doing the infrastructure thing, it's going to be this thing where we auction off the infrastructure of the United States to companies and countries, and everything has a toll affixed to it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't know how Emery and Marvelline are going to respond to that. But I'm guessing that they're not going to like stopping every 15 miles to throw $10 in a bucket.
Well, and you know that bridge that goes between Detroit and Windsor?
Yes.
The guy that owns the property on both ends of the bridge has fought for years them building another bridge, because he's made so much money off that and speculation on the land, because they're going to have to buy the land, I guess, or they put it, you know, someplace where it won't work nearly as well.
And you know what? That's just capitalism in action, Clarity. A couple of hundred years ago, at the foot of the mountain I live on, there's a little community called Gawley Bridge, and it's the confluence of the New River and the Gawley River, which forms the Great Kanawha River, right there. And for years and years and years, a fellow whose last name was Kincaid had the concession running the ferry across the Gawley River, because it comes in, let's see if you're headed this way, it comes in from the north, and you cross the Gawley. You don't cross the newly formed Kanawha River. And so you'd take the ferry across the Gawley, because it's the narrower of the two streams. And he made a nice living off of ferrying people across the Gawley. So in those early days of the old Dominion, Old Virginia, this is before 1863, they finally got around to noticing that they needed a bridge, hence the name of the town, Gawley Bridge. And so they built one. Do you know what Mr. Kincaid did?
No.
Burned it down. Because he damned well did not appreciate big government coming in and stealing his livelihood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's under. Yeah. Fella got to eat, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many early automobile factories were firebombed by guys who made their living braiding buggy whips.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you know, in 1700, the number one occupation in Great Britain was woodcutter. And then coal came along. And woodcutters were gone in a generation. The forests were gone.
And a good thing, too, because they just about run out of trees. That whole deforestation thing will rock your world. The Maya people learned that the hard way. Read a book several years ago pointing out that the Maya and the British ran out of trees at about the same time. And the British discovered coal. And the same did not apply to the Maya, whose civilizations then collapsed. And the folks just kind of wandered back into the woods and started farming, started their basic subsistence farming again. Didn't build any more pyramids. Whereas Britain had the coal.
And they had the New World to just go take.
Well, eventually, yes, absolutely.
Manifest destiny.
You betcha. Merkin exceptionalism. Yeah.
Well, I've been, you know, thinking more, you know, about the big picture, and you talked about China and India, and one of these outside the box scientists talks about, you know, instead of relying so much on nitrogen fertilizers, is to remineralize the soil. And he was a big proponent of using great glacier rock dust to put on soils that have been depleted.
That's interesting.
Yes, and it actually increases the nutritional value of the crops. I bought a couple bags of it when I lived in Alameda, and it was actually mixing that with the clay soil that they had there. I had amazing carrots and stuff that I grew there. But I don't know, you know, he tried to make a go of it, and I guess the shipping costs were so much for, you know, the weight and stuff that it just never
took off. Yeah, hard for it to catch on.
Yeah, but it makes sense. It really does, because, you know, the closer things get to the ocean, it seems like, you know, everything gets sloshed out. And
over time, you just wear the soil out if you're not careful.
Well, then I guess that's kind of where the no-till thing is in a way. Besides, you use less carbon because you're not running the tractor as many times across the ground. But every time you turn the soil, you lose, you know, some of that native nitrogen that's there in the soil itself.
Yeah, unless you then follow up with, say, nitrogen-fixing plants.
Well, exactly, rotation. But I don't see that rotation. And you know, if you go into alfalfa, which does build out, that's a 8-10 year project before you can plant something else.
Well, down in the little town of Enterprise, Alabama, is, to the best of my knowledge, the only memorial to a pestiferous insect of which I am aware in the world. In Enterprise, Alabama, they have a boll weevil monument. Because the infestation by the boll weevil completely ruined their economy and their cotton crops. And compelled them to learn to diversify their planting and thereby rejuvenate their soil.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's amazing the mundane little things that get tied up, that happen in government that affect people's lives so profoundly. If you look up something called the Muscle Shoals Bill, you will find that in the early years of the 20th century, there was a desire to use the hydroelectric power that had been created by the dam that was built on the Tennessee River at the Muscle Shoals, to use that electricity to power an industrial site run by the government to develop fertilizers, because by that point in time, soils in the United States were being rapidly depleted. And there was a need to figure out some way to reinvigorate them. And the idea of nitrogen fertilizers had been discovered not too long before that. And so they wanted to use they wanted to use the power of the government and the government's dam to make the electricity to run the government installation that would produce the nitrates for fertilizer. And the Republicans of the day said, no, no, of course not. We can't have the government going into business against business. And George Norris was a senator from Nebraska. It got killed at one point, but when FDR comes along, the idea gets revived and becomes the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Wow.
And at the time, nitrites and nitrates have another handy function. Are you aware of them?
Yeah, pickling.
Beyond that.
Gunpowder.
Bingo, they're really good for blowing people up. And so that became an industrial research facility for better ways to blow things up. But eventually it was repurposed to be the International Fertilizer Development Center. And people used to come from all over the world to, and they'd bring their soil samples with them, and they would tailor fertilizers for them to go back and try to rejuvenate the food production capabilities and qualities of their native soil.
Yeah.
And you had the conservative pro business. We're pro business here is what we are. And they didn't want that to happen because free market. And oddly enough, that fertilizer center became an economic engine of that region, helping to bring in a diversity of people from all over the world and all over the country that made that little corner of Northwest Alabama a very almost Brigadoon-like in comparison to the rest of the state.
They've transformed the land here in the Columbia Basin. When I was growing up, we used to drive from here to up into British Columbia, the central Kootenai area there, to visit my dad's aunt. And my dad would point out around Moses Lake and Grand Coulee Dam. He says, this is all going to be cultivated in farms and orchards and blah, blah, blah. And I just went, you know, I couldn't even imagine. But somehow he knew. He says, yeah, they're going to start taking water out of the river, and they're going to farm all this land. And sure enough, you know, 50 years later, it's all under cultivation, and the Columbia Basin grows more food than they do in the San Joaquin.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Well, we get more productivity because it doesn't stay hot at night, so the plants recover. So we don't have the stress that they do in the summer.
And then you have a meaningful winter in which the soil sort of rests and cools off and recuperates. And having a little bit of a winter goes a long way in killing off some of the bugs.
Yeah, I was just going to say that we need one. I'd hate to wish for another winter like last winter, but they say that it put a dent in the one of the spruce bud worms in the forest that have been stressed out from all the drought. And they need below zero weather for a couple of weeks to really get in, because they burrow way inside the bark to winter, you know. So everything's just got to solidify.
This has been a delightful conversation and a happy little wandering all over creation. I got an update. For you. We were talking about onions in Asia, and I got a note because we've got a correspondent in China, Steve, what your children, why your children are fat, lack of cheap fruits and vegetables. Most food items here in China are about the same prices as back home, especially meat and other processed foods. But fruits and vegetables remarkably cheaper, whatever you might have to say about quality. Mountains of vegetables, all the time. Cherries are probably about a third of the U.S. price. Same for tomatoes, garlic, peppers, apples, and just about anything else you can think of. Onions? Lots of onions. And spring onions. Got to have those here. Avocados? Those are expensive everywhere. Thanks, rich white people, for discovering the avocado. It's the cost of labor, of course. You know, like those dirty, unproductive immigrants who pick all the crops in California and elsewhere to feed everybody regardless of the price at those terribly low wages. Even though that wall is meant to keep them out or keep them in during picking season, I guess. Nationalism and appetite. Quite the stupid pill. Regards, Stephen China. Yeah, and I started seeing this a month or two ago, this fad, and every now and then I'll hear about one. You know, a year or so ago, it was people putting butter in coffee. I was like, well, okay, that's something I'm never going to do.
I put green butter in my coffee, Bob.
I have never done it. I don't know.
Oregon grown.
Oh, yeah. And not just any green, okay? It's not like it's produced with sustainable practices. We're talking about a different kind of green, aren't we?
I got seeds. It's got to be sustainable.
Yeah. So there was that. And then, but a few months ago, I started reading about how the hipsters had discovered avocado toast. And I thought, what, Edith, huh? But yeah, I guess it became, and I'll get I'll get a note from some member of the community telling me that I'm just some damn rube hillbilly up in the sticks, and don't I know how good avocado toast is? Well, I'm guessing it is. But then I began seeing articles about why your avocados are more expensive, thank the hipsters. And then I got to thinking about it, because I think about these things and my mind is not a happy place. Well, it's a busy place. It's not necessarily unhappy. But, it was a couple or three or four years ago where you began to be able to order mashed avocado on your sub at Subway. And, you know, I guess they're picked really, really green and they don't taste particularly avocado-ish. And when the little wiggling pig 6 miles up the road from me has pre-processed, vacuum-sealed plastic bowls of guacamole, you know that somebody out there has decided, hey, we're not getting enough money out of these damned avocados. Because of all those, is avocado a fruit or a vegetable? I think of it as a vegetable because it's not sweet or tangy. But whatever it is, I love them. I do. Ever since I was tiny. You can make me as happy as I'm likely to be gastronomically, and I can get away with this, by the way, yogurt me. With just cutting up an avocado into little cubes, and throwing some salt on it, and a little blast of balsamic vinegar and a chopped up tomato and a little bit of sweet onion, I'm good to go. Especially in warm weather. But I noticed that when Steve said, you know, avocados, those are expensive everywhere. Well, yeah, they are. Thanks, rich white people, for discovering the avocado.
Well, same with almonds. They cost, except cashews, kind of the same. But almonds cost twice as much as any other nut.
I didn't realize that.
Well, it seems like to me, you can get peanuts for like
peanuts.
A couple dollars a pound. For peanuts, yeah. But almonds, you know, they still keeping the price up around $7, $8 a pound. And if you buy them, you know, for snack size, you're talking about $15, $16 a pound.
Yeah, and
they're marketing them well. Same with the Avocado Commission. They really market avocados very well.
You know, if it wasn't for barbecue, I would probably be a vegetarian. Because I love nuts, love my veggies, love avocados, love tomatoes.
I think you're learning the zen of food and that it's more finding that just what you need. I've done what they call caloric restriction, where you only eat so many calories a day, and it's supposed to improve your immune response.
It just makes me mean and cranky.
But Bob, we need somebody with a little bit of a bite on the progressive side. Besides Malloy, I imagine Mike's teeth are getting worn down.
Well, and Mike, you know what? Mike doesn't eat just a hell of a lot of red meat either.
No, he's a very healthy man. He walks every day.
Swims.
Yeah.
I hope they're having some. I don't know where they are. I just hope they're having some nice beach time today, at the moment. But by the way, GK is telling me, Bob, I believe avocados are classified as a fruit.
Yeah, they're a monocot.
Yeah. And of course, just because it's fun to mention random interesting things to know, that's another one of those words that, it ain't English. It comes from the native language spoken by the people of the Valley of Mexico. And it becomes avocado because the Spanish were unable to pronounce the complex sounds that the people of the Valley of Mexico made with their language. You notice there's not a lot of difference between the Spanish word for lawyer and the Spanish word for avocado? Let's have a lawyer salad. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much, Clarity. I appreciate
that. That was good, Bob. I've never heard a lawyer compared to an avocado. Many other inane and inanimate and, voracious predator types. But I guess they are benign, too.
And you know what? Some of them can be good. I just got a note from Michael and Madison saying avocado toast is the reason why millennials can't afford their own homes, don't you know? Seriously, some idiot right-winger said that, and it became a relentlessly mocked meme. I saw that story a couple of weeks ago.
Well, the mockingbird alt-right thing, just, I don't know, it's like... Nah, 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 kind of thing. It just, it gets old really fast. I kind of understand why that guy popped off, even though I don't advocate losing your temper. But after you hear that stupidity for so long, you just want to, do something to close their, get them to shut up.
I know.
Is that nice?
Well.
That's not nice. I know.
Sometimes you just want a little bit of peace.
And
by the way,
or you want to turn up your amp loud enough that you don't have to hear their conversation.
Yeah, and then just turn the pickup of your guitar toward the speaker and let the feedback take over. Mm. Especially a single coil. And by the way, Ron in the Puttable North says, and growing almonds in California uses up an incredible amount of water. That it does. It doesn't seem like it, but because they're nuts. So I mean, how?
Well, they've got water contracts and water rights that go back to like 1903 or something in Southern California. That they have to now. They're talking about building a tunnel from the Sacramento Delta down. It's so they won't lose so much to evaporation. Can you imagine what an environmental?
I saw something within the last year of. I guess it was down in Southern California. They were throwing these hollow black plastic balls out on the reservoirs to try to block some evaporation. Yeah.
Shrink wrap your lake.
And by the way, I'm reminded by Ron and Raleigh, different Ron, different Raleigh, Bob, peanuts are legumes, not nuts. And that's true. And that's why I've never understood people who say bold peanuts. I don't like them bold peanuts. I like mine dry roasted. Man, it's one of those glories of traveling in the deep South. Just a guy on the side of the road with a big pot and a fire going under it, and it's boiling away, and you stop and get you a big old bag of bold peanuts. And oh, you can go through some bald peanuts. I like them. I like them with the Cajun spice, where they're nice and not, you know, got a nice zing to them. Oh, they're good. Oh, they are so good.
I guess that's something that my family wasn't keen on, because I can never remember any of us doing that here. You know,
or I don't think it's an up there where you are kind of thing.
Okay.
It's a Southern thing, and maybe it's because, I don't know, maybe the idea of boiling peanuts came along as a way of nutritional support for people who were very, 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 very poor before the era came along where you could grind them into peanut butter, because they become soft and much easier to eat. Clarity, I'm going to clear the line here, because we are in the middle of a thunderstorm here, and I have a desperate fear that at some point in time I'm probably just going to disappear from the air. Because Frontier Communications being Frontier Communications.
Stay away from the lightning rod.
Yeah, you're saying that to a guy who's surrounded by uninterruptible power supplies, computers, mix desks, monitors.
Well, you got your Converse tennis shoes on, right?
I think I've got rubber soles on my old on my old Sperry topsiders, but maybe that's close enough for government work.
Well, that's better than wearing a steel shank.
I do not have those. Thank you. Yes.
Well, Bob, I'm glad to chat with you. I got a fresh batch of Mayakobas on the porch cooking.
Oh, hot diggity! Oh, those.
So I'm well.
How are? Well, I got to ask you before we say our goodbyes. How are your cornbread skills?
You know, I don't like to cook hush puppies for just myself. You know, but no, I know how to do that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily. Not, ooh, that was a good one. You know, you know what this is? This is Earth responding to the 4th of July fireworks. You think you can make some noise? Listen to this shit. I'm surprised it's not coming through the microphone. If that means stuff's working.
Heard that last one.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Toto and I were in our bunker last night because all the neighbors were shooting off M80s and who knows what.
Oh, it went into the wee small hours of the morning here.
3 a.m. last night they quit. But my poor dog, she was just terrified.
You don't have to make hush puppies. You know, a good iron skillet, even a small one, you know, just enough for, because if you've got a nice pot of Mayakobas going, they really do deserve a pan of cornbread. Ooh, there was a big one.
Well, I bake a pretty good one. I think I told you about it with the Anaheim chilies and then the red.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one there.
Oh, see, to have a hunk of that with those Mayakobas, oh, I'd be a happy man. Be a happy.
Well,
man.
I got some fresh corn tortillas. We got a.
Well, I don't. That's close.
Yeah, and they're not the, they make them like every other day, here, so. They're pretty
nice.
Darn good.
I'd say. Well, Clarity, you have a wonderful afternoon and into your evening.
I will, Bob. And if I don't talk to you before you take off for D.C., just remember that you're going to the big city, and don't let them know where you're from.
I'm kind of walking dead giveaway.
You heard that song by Mose Allison, If You Go to the City?
Yeah. Yep. I know exactly of which you speak. Clarity, have a good evening. Take care.
You too, brother.
Bye now.
Bye.
The one and only Clarity in the far northwest. This is just getting better, this thunderstorm. I mean, this is better than the thunder at the start of The Doors' Riders on the Storm, for heaven's sakes. It is 6 minutes past the hour. I've got somebody holding on the stress line, and they've been very, very patient, so I will go there as well. But if the program should suddenly disappear, at least you will know why. I mean, when the, you know, I've got you know, curtains and quilts and stuff hanging in front of the windows here to kind of dampen the sound and everything. And when the lightning is profound enough that it flashes through, I can see the flashes through all of that, I know we're in a good one. Like I said, 6 minutes past the hour on this prayer meeting Wednesday, I've got a fascinating story here that Kelly just sent me, and I can't wait to share it. We remain stuck at $50 toward meeting John's challenge. Okay, so you're serious. I get that. We need 10 folks at $5 or five folks at $10. How about five $10 a month subscribers in the next 50 minutes or so? That would be extremely helpful because we don't want to leave a $100 challenge just laying on the table, especially when we're trying to, you know, get me to Washington D.C. to at least be there. To speak up for the people who would be otherwise rendered voiceless. $50 to go. All right, then. Somewhere in Michigan, because you have been so patient. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how are you doing?
I'm well.
This is Marcy, your lesbian Lithuanian mentat.
Oh, wonderful. Hi, Marcy.
How are you doing?
I'm well, but you're a mentat, so you knew that.
Well, yes. I have to tell you, I just love the program so much. You always end up making me smile and think, and love the history lessons and usually the food porn. Although I have to admit, I'm a northern girl, so I can't deal with a lot of the spices. But I swear I remember hearing you talk about the boll weevil monument before, somewhere in the midst of stuff. And I want to say a couple of things. First of all, I want to thank you for being there for everybody. I want to thank you very much for your forbearance. And I know I'm behind in getting you your challenges taken care of, but they are coming.
Oh, don't worry. We know it's don't apologize.
I feel honor bound to do that because you're an honorable man. And like I said in my letter to you way back months ago, there's many, many times when I feel like you are at least a cousin or somehow a long-lost brother. It's really kind of interesting hearing you talk about stuff. The even just the comment about boiled peanuts, that flashed me back to somewhere in my childhood. I seem to recall having had those once and thinking that they were good and never having them again. So,
well, you know, you can, Marcy, make them north of the Mason-Dixie line. You just have to be kind of patient. You need those great big tall aluminum stock pots?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get one of those and you make yourself a really, really, really salty brine.
Okay.
And you get, and most grocery stores carry them, get yourself a couple of pounds of raw peanuts, not roasted, raw. No salt, no cooking, no nothing. Just some people call them green. And set those things to boil. And once you get a good rolling boil going, just kind of cover them and back off the fire a little bit so that you don't get them boiling over or anything. But they got to boil for a long time because it takes a while for the salt brine to get all the way through the shell and get into the peanut and for the heat to actually cook the peanut inside the peanut shell.
All right. Well, we'll give that a try.
And you don't necessarily have to use the spicy stuff, but, you know, you can throw in some onion powder, some garlic powder, some cumin, some mild chili powder, things like that. And it just, wow.
That sounds good. I have to tell you what the thing that just teed me off, and I said, okay, that's enough. I'm on the phone, and that's why I've been sitting here patient.
And I do appreciate your patience.
Oh, but it's absolutely worth it. I live in Dearborn. I live in that place that evidently doesn't look like America anymore to that, and I'm sorry to use the word, I don't like to use it frequently, bitch.
I think she kind of earned it on that one, Marcy, because I had a note from our buddy Matt in San Francisco, who he damn near had to throw his phone out the window on Castro Street one evening listening to the program. But he said, if this Ms. Rios was in front of me, she would become very familiar with the term bitch slap. And both you and Matt are perfectly civilized individuals, okay? So it takes some doing to get there. Matt continued and said, I've run stores in some of the most affluent counties in California. Some people are just disrespectful of public accommodations, It has nothing to do with their immigrant status. And
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, there are. I mean, it's just humans. Okay, humans. Some of them. I mean, we haven't worked out all the genetic hinks and kinks and flaws, and some people like to work in poop the way Picasso worked in paint. And I know people who have had to deal with restrooms in the aftermath of any of things like that. And generally, they didn't say that everybody who walked into the restroom that day was speaking some funny language, twit weren't English.
Well, like I say, living in Dearborn, I'm fairly well exposed to this. Now, a story I'm going to tell you is has got a good chance of making it a little bit easier to identify me, but I don't care. My ex-wife and I are parents to three children, the eldest of which is a female by birth and decided in her eighth grade and both that and freshman year of high school to play football. And she wasn't no pansy. She decided that she would go out, and she actually played nose tackle.
Jesus!
And regularly, I mean, she ran till the play was down, all the way down. It didn't matter how many people were on the running back, she was running after him.
In what I understand to be Southern football circles, Marcy, she played to the last echo of the whistle.
You bet. And got mentioned very positively about that by her coaches. You know, why aren't you guys more like, you know, and stuff like that. She got a fair decent reputation. She lost a lot of her height and size, you know, ability when high school came along, but because the boys just shot up. But she still played the year out. And as a result, my wife and I went to the fall sports banquet. And my wife, who is, I would generally have considered her a very open-minded person until I came out to her and then a few other incidents that have happened in the past, she leaned over to me and said, well, would you look at that, all up there at the head table. All the head table is full of the varsity football. And I said, what about it? And
oh, no.
She said, well, look at all of those names, okay? And oddly enough, most of the names were not Smith and Jones. And she said, this is, I don't remember exactly the phrase that she used, but she was not enthused. And I said, I look at this as being exceptionally encouraging. And she said, well, how do you figure that? And I said, well, because these youth are playing American football. They don't have this sport where their families come from, if they are, in fact, recent immigrants. I said, some of these names have been around here for years and years, decades. They've been in here for a very long time. They're assimilating. And I was really taken aback, and it got me to thinking, and I've done some little bits of journal stuff, and I came up with the idea that there's a lot of people, and I imagine it applies to a lot of cities and towns across the country, but I found that I've developed a term called the closet racist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the people that don't really look it, most of the time don't sound it, but every so often you're able to catch a glimpse.
You just have to play the right note on the dog whistle, Marcy.
Yeah, because I even found that with my own mother. Now, she's of a very different generation, but she also, you know, there's just times when, you know, a word slips and, you know, I was gobsmacked some time ago because I remember she, just out of the clear blue, she used that word that has an E and I, two G's, an R and an N, and isn't ginger. I love that phrase, by the way.
And that's stolen, by the way. That comes from a comedy ditty by Tim Minchin, M-I-N-C-H-I-N, the same guy who does my favorite Christmas song, White Wine in the Sun. And it's called Only a Ginger Can Call Another Ginger Ginger.
Oh, my goodness. I'll have to look that up because that's fantastic. Yeah, you opened my eyes to that one. I thought, oh, my goodness, that's great. But, you know, I see these things. I see people walking. Yes, I see a lot of hijab. And I hear a lot of non-English, and I don't even want to try to identify it because I don't know. And I'm one of those really odd people that goes, oh, I don't know. So I'm not going to say that it's Farsi. It might be. I don't know that specifically there is an Arabic. I just find a lot of, you know, good God, Bob. I mean, some of we white people, we are just so goddamn stupid.
Well, and when you take stupid and you fold it in thoroughly with mean, you come out with a pretty vile little souffle, Marcy. And you know, when I played that clip from Sandy Rios, and I heard the word Dearborn. Because, and this kind of goes back to Texas Betsy's question about, you know, why do you spend so much time on these people? Well, because we aren't spending enough time on these people. Because if we were spending enough time on these people, people would not be able to get away with using dog whistle code like Dearborn. You know, when I go around the good America, but then there's Dearborn, and I knew, because I am so immersively familiar with this viciousness, I knew that what she was saying would be recognized by the mouth-breathing knuckle walkers who listened to her. What she was saying was Muslims.
Yeah, which doesn't exactly follow, because a lot of my kids have had a number of friends, and there are a number of Christian sects which come from the Levant. I mean,
you mean like some of the oldest Christian sects within Christianity itself? Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, my state here, West Virginia, you know, we're the Trumpiest state in America, Marcy. And we don't want none of them Syrian Muslim refugees here. because Jeebus. And, you know, that begs the question why any self-respecting Syrian would ever want to come to West Virginia. But, you know, we'll leave that go. But we do have a population of people who come from traditionally Muslim countries, absolutely. And they have their Islamic centers, and that's fine. We've even got a Hindu center in West Virginia, and that's cool, too.
Oh, my God.
I know. But here's the thing. When coal boomed originally in this region, everybody came from everywhere, Marcy. And nobody bats an eyelash at the fact that if you go to the state capital, Charleston, the capital city, the area of the riverfront right smack dab in downtown was developed as a public space where you could have bands and 4th of July fireworks and river parties and things like that. And the name of it is Hadad Riverfront Park. Or, as we pronounce it around here, Hadad. Okay?
Right.
That is not a fine old Irish name. But it is the name of a group of enterprising, industrious, and in this case, Christian people from the Levant who've been here for 100 years. And then there's the Murads and the Salamis, and of course that guy. It's the I was talking to Mr. Salami the other day, and the assimilation is perfect, and there's not a question asked. But It's the newness coupled with the brutal, vicious xenophobia that quite often throughout our history populism runs on. We look up and we go, oh, well, populism, the voice of the people. Mm, yeah, boy. But no. Populism always has a really hateful underbelly that in many instances is focused on immigrants. You know, I share your view of all those names at that varsity table. That is assimilation. Those are kids who were not playing the national sport of the country where their folks came from.
That was my point. I said, you know, it's not, you know, football as the rest of the world sees it. I said, it's American football. It's not, you know, we call it soccer, you know, because America, you know, land of whatever. But, yeah, it's just, and another point that just came to mind is I've got some really, it's one of those good news, bad news sort of things, but it also shows assimilation. I see an awful lot of high school age males who are from not around these parts, shall we say, and they're getting obese. They've assimilated enough to adopt the American diet. They're eating at McDonald's all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's just, and when I hear, and that's why I say, you know what, when I heard that clip, and Mac, you're the other guy, the pastor, I'm just, you know, that's, I got to wonder if, you know, how many neurons there are that actually fire in a given day for him. But
no, I'm convinced. I mean, I've hung around my fair share of intoxicated people. That dude's half in the bag every time he gets behind the microphone.
Only half?
Hey, well, I'm being charitable, Marcy.
Okay. Well, it is prayer meeting, so I guess you need to be that way. But her, that was just, you're right. It was a dog whistle, and it's a hate. And I can't deal with that anymore. My kids all know, I keep saying, you know, I'm moving to Montana, notwithstanding the jerk that just got elected to Congress there.
Frank Zappa recommended it.
My point was just to get away from the rest of the world. Right now, Mars is starting to look pretty good.
Have you, I don't know if you have my fascination with old animation. Have you ever seen that old MGM cartoon, The Cat Who Hated People?
No, I haven't.
It's worth looking up. I won't ruin it for you.
Okay.
But for anyone who says Mars is looking pretty good, I can highly recommend, because, you know, that's back in the Tex Avery days, and it doesn't get any better than what that was.
Okay. I'm familiar with that style. I regularly pester my children with talking about Ray Harryhausen, and they just roll their eyes, and I say, you know, there was a time when we didn't have CGI. When you couldn't just put one person in front of a tube and make them create, you know, all this stuff. You had to have people with vision. You had to have people with, you know, with art. And I don't want to take too much away from the current people. They have to have art too. But
there's a difference. I mean, I was down at the Rippy Mart just a day or so ago, and because I'm a strange person. For some reason or another, I forget what the particulars were. There had to be something that drew it out of me. But I did my bad W.C. Fields impression. Yes.
You have a good one?
No. Thank you. Love you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So I looked at the young clerk and I said, Fields? W.C. Fields? Ever heard of W.C. Fields? No. Oh, well, you're doomed. Thank you. Goodbye. But in the modern era, you cannot make those cultural assumptions.
No, you can't. Although I will say this, evidently I've done something raising my children right, because one writes prolifically. One didn't want to deal. She took a class in high school that dealt with it was basic photography. And she really wanted to try and do everything with a digital camera, until I showed her a double ring zoom and on a 35mm, you know, box camera, and she goes, oh, oh. And that was the start of her trying to, she's working on getting into film study.
Well, now.
And she's got an eye for it. She actually has the eye. So I'm really
you can't
thrilled
teach
with that.
You cannot teach that part of it.
No, you can't. And the other thing that was interesting, both she and her brother are big into vinyl. In fact, my son has a better vinyl collection than I've ever had.
Well, now.
Slightly depressing. I remember getting rid of a bunch of it because I thought, okay, it's dead. I can live with CDs, I guess. And then it came back, and I'm like, son of a bitch.
Well, see,
why did you get rid of that?
Well, see, one of the things, and I'd love to figure out how to do it and how much it would cost, because it's just something that's been on my mind for a while. One of the things that's going to come into play when I get done with all the computer stuff and I bring in the new mix desk, this unit is also made for, it's got turntable inputs.
Oh, excellent.
And I would love to figure out a way to know how much it would cost to pay the rights on it, you know, maybe not send it out at CD quality or anything, and just as much for the act of choosing and cueing music as for the music itself. I'd love to do like a Saturday night, and I even came up with a name for it, Real Vinyl Radio.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And do it sort of AOR style, where you're pulling, you know, you're not pulling the hit cuts, you're pulling the good stuff that never got airplay.
Right, exactly.
I'll get pushback on this, you know, limit it from, say, 1960 to 1990.
Oh, that's okay.
And then go broke buying vinyl.
Yeah, my son will chafe slightly at that kind of a notion because you don't have enough of Elvis in his, you know, in his wheelhouse. But that's okay.
Well, and there's no Buddy Holly and the Crickets there, and the best of Chuck and the Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis. So, you know, I don't know. We might have to grandfather it in a little bit.
That can be a work in progress, but yeah.
But wouldn't that be fun? You know, 3 hours on a Saturday night?
I'd be there because when I get a chance to, that's the kind of stuff I'll end up doing on a Saturday night anyway, is, you know, putting a LP on and listening.
And take, you know, calls and requests and... At least, you know, you'd have to build up the vinyl library before you could count on being able to take requests. But my God, that would be a blast!
Oh, it would.
That's right up there with my old idea of the Horn Radio Shakespeare Theater of the Air, where everybody would take assignments, would take castings of various characters in Shakespeare plays and sit at home and record the lines. And then send them to me, and I'd mix them down, and we'd have a Shakespeare play where nobody was ever in the same room together.
See, you and I work along a lot of the same lines. One of the things that I was trying to come up with, because of scheduling making it so difficult to get all my kids together at the same time, right now my son's away at a summer job, and we love to watch movies, and... some of our favorite movies are, you know, current sci-fi and superhero stuff. But I came up with this notion that perhaps with a Skype line, if we could get a Skype line together, when we'd just all sit down and watch the same thing, you know, separately, but be together on Skype so we can make comments and stuff like that to each other. We're really good watchers of movies, and then we're really bad people afterwards because we take it apart, put it back together, write new scenes, new dialogue, everything. We probably ruin the movies for ourselves as much as anybody that happens to be near us.
Oh, I'm terrible for sitting and watching movies with my kids and with Agnes. And you know, we'll deconstruct things like, why was that funny?
Oh, we do that too, and I'm usually the one that's got the better angle on, all right, because I've got the greater life experience as far as, okay, if you take a look at this. I remember talking to him way back about, you know, things like, oh, you remember the Toy Story sets from Pixar?
Oh, yeah.
Toy Story movies? And at the end of the movies, they had outtakes, which, of course, I'm rolling on the floor laughing at the concept of outtakes on an animation.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because they had to be written, and the kids would never really, they didn't understand it for quite some time until they got, you know, old enough, and I'd say, okay, they didn't have to do that. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't a mistaken scene.
Because there aren't any. By definition, there aren't any.
Right. You know, they're just.
But there is a history of that stuff, Marcy. Back in the heyday of Warner Brothers Animation Studios, they would produce animations for the company Christmas Party that were bawdy and blue, and there's something especially funny about watching Porky Pig say "son of a gun."
Somewhere along the way, I seem to remember here. I've got.
It's out there. You can go find it.
I've got a very good ear memory. It's one of my curses because I can be listening to something on the radio with someone, and they'll say, "Oh, this is the best. This is the best track they ever did." And I'm like, "Okay, it's not the original." And they go, "Yeah, it is." I said, "No, it's not." I said, "It's from a subsequent album." I said, "They did a. It was from the Greatest Hits album. That was not on the Greatest Hits album." I don't know all the albums, you know, by heart of where they were, but I know the original pieces, and I can play them back at will. Which is great when I don't. When I'm at work, I work pretty much alone, and that's both a good thing and a bad thing because I either get earworms, or
aren't they awful?
Or I think too much.
Oh, and that's what I was saying earlier. I can think the funny out of anything.
Well, I'm right there with you, brother. I can think the funny out, and I can over-analysis is usually my middle name. So it's just there's and you talk about the dark places in your brain. I have there's a couple of corners that I'm going it won't go into.
Nasty ass spider. Yeah. Very well played. I think we can safely say that is the first Ungoliant reference in the entire history of the horn. So if that doesn't,
really?
Yeah, if that doesn't get a cowbell,
oh my goodness, I got a cowbell. Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't have much to give, but by God, we're pretty liberal with the cowbells.
Well, I tell you, like I said at the start, you give an awful lot because there's been some times when you've said just the right things, just the right subjects have come up, and it got me through some difficult times over the last, good God, I think it's been 7 years.
Wow. I know. I look, Cypher, and I still have to do the math, too.
It was right after, I caught one of your, you have a style when you get righteous indignation, and your righteous indignation is absolute. And it was right after, I think it was Upper Big Branch disaster.
I think I had some righteous indignation about then.
You had one in April of that year, I think it was 2010, and you were powerful. And it was like, okay, I really do have to, because I had, Malloy had said, you know, yeah, you should listen to this guy every so often, you know, so I listened to Malloy a lot of times, and I'm like, okay, it's difficult to catch him. He's, you know, I either got to listen at midnight, or I got to try and catch him during, you know, his regular broadcast, and that's when I'm trying to fix dinner for the kids. And I heard that, you know, yes, you use some colorful language, and it's like, okay, well, we'll see and stuff like that. But I caught you the one time, and it was like, okay, this is the man. This is absolutely the man. God, I wish I had a way to just put you on air across the country.
It would be interesting to just to find out what would happen.
For, and I mean as in for absolute permanent, just fund the horn as a going thorn in the side to people who are stupid or people who are ignorant and unwilling to try and remove their ignorance.
And you know, first of all, Agnes doesn't appreciate any of this, Marcy, because it means there's going to big she's going to get out the big needle to pop my head with as soon as because this is just not. But there are some plans out there. They are not doable right now, but you know, maybe in the future. If you look at certain models, the wave of the I don't care for video because I'm a radio person, but am I speaking in upspeak? I don't know. You can tell I'm getting uncomfortable when that happens.
Yes,
but I'm not crazy about video. But anybody I talk to says, "Well, you know, you're going to have to go to video, Bob." I mean, if you really want to reach people, you're going to have to go to video, which sort of baffles me. Because I don't know how in the world people drive in their cars or walk down city streets with headphones and earbuds in their ears watching things without walking into traffic. I just don't. But that's what it, and so I have a plan. But again, you know, what you said, if I had the money and you know, a lot of people say, oh, if I win the lottery. But there's a way of doing it. It could be done. But if I'm going to go, and I mean, I'll give this much of it away. If I'm going to go to video, if we're going to do video, I don't see a benefit. Because it adds in another layer of technicality, and I have enough trouble with it as it is. So Agnes will have to come in here full time, and God only knows what'll happen in the rest of the house when that goes down. But it'll add in another layer of technical requirements, another layer of internet requirements. But I see no purpose, I see no value, I see no interest in just broadcasting a picture of me sitting in a chair yapping into a microphone. That is less interesting to me than watching paint dry.
That's got some value for, you know, B-roll, you know, as background to a story. But that's, you're right, that's it. I've poked around and I've found other things, you know, where you're essentially just, you know, watching. Even a while back I was seeing Malloy, okay, and it's just him. There with the microphone, and I don't particularly pay attention to what's going on with it. When he had the cuss cards, that was kind of interesting, because he was still on terrestrial a couple places, and so he couldn't use words, but he could put them up on a, you know, internet video feed. So that was kind of humorous. But apart from that, and I don't see that helping you, but.
So the vision I've got, and I can go ahead and share this, the vision I have in this, Marcy, is that it becomes a little more interesting if I'm able to walk around. If the set is a set, if it's something that's got enough space in it to allow me mobility. And I, you know, I despise him. I hate everything he stands for, but if you look at and I'm not talking about doing anything on this scale, but just in terms of admiration for technical determination, if you look at the set that Glenn Beck has, that right there. If he needs to sit at a desk, he can sit at a desk. If he wants to sit on a couch with David Barton and tell lies about American history, then do that too. And if he wants to go and draw stick figures of boiling frogs on chalkboards, that's a possibility.
Right.
And I think that would be engaging. And if you couple that with sufficient technology, say, you know, if let's say Marcy wanted to do this, we could split screen you on Skype and me in the studio. That would have value. Because I can't tell you the number of emails I get from people saying, have you ever seen so-and-so? I know what so-and-so looks like because of what they sound like, but I'm pretty sure that they don't really look like that. Because that's part of the magic of radio. People form impressions based on nothing more than content and sound.
Oh, that's true. You, when I started seeing pictures of you, like through Facebook and stuff like that, it's like, really? Wow. Okay. Had about the size, but there's a lot of you that's different from my initial mental picture of you, you know, back with just radio or with just, you know, with just the audio and how you look now and that sort of thing. It's not a problem. It's just, you know, there's a difference. And
oh, and I learned that early on. The DJ that I listened to as a little kid, that I would listen to, and you know, adolescent, teen, whatever, listen to at night. I mean, he had that radio voice, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The radio voice. And he sounded like he must have been 15 feet tall and about, you know, 700 pounds. And he did not make public appearances. And I later found out why. Because he was about 5'3", 96 pounds soaking wet, and had an Adam's apple the size of a basketball. And it would have destroyed everything.
Probably glasses, too.
Yeah, bottle bottoms.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like me.
It was absolutely at odds with everything that the mere sound of his voice and the content of his work gave out. So you give some of that away with video, but by the same token, at least there's enough of a visual element there to make it interesting to people. And you put that stuff up on, and there's so much work that goes into it. It's one thing to work live, but the post-production on video is hours long after something like that.
Yeah, I know that too. The one daughter, the film student, was the lead director for the high school here has got a film program that's nationally known, and she caught the feature in her senior year. She did the directing for the feature. It was gorgeous work, but there was so much work that had to be done in post to make sure everything fit right, and all of the they had to come back and do ADR work, and oh geez, there was a couple of nights where she was there for very, very, very long hours. And as a high school senior, they're getting into lower gear because school wants gone, so I don't want to really fail them, but I would like them to not have an ulcer when they leave, type of thing.
Yeah.
My son had that too. He, in fact, was an editor for one of the pieces, and it was like, okay, he's good at it. He likes editing audio better. He's more of an audio person.
Well, it's a little less time consuming just because of the processor,
right?
The processor oomph that's required compared to video. And you can also be a little bit more obsessive-compulsive about, you know, individual noises than you can in video. And it's also, you know, single focus. You're focused on one thing, the audio impression upon the listener, as opposed to when you're dealing with video, you have to deal with the audio and the video impression.
Right.
So you get an idea of where we're. But I thank you very kindly, Marcy, for the kind words. Because it's encouraging.
They're earned. I have to tell you, they're earned. I've been listening to the radio since I was, quite small, and I for a time I listened to the gas bag. I still do, mostly to find out what the other side is saying.
Right. Sure.
And to understand, without knowing that I was quoting him, I was always a fan of Learned Hand with the idea of more speech.
Yeah.
Knowing both sides of an issue, some of the most interesting arguments that I ever had with my wife ended up with, "Do you really believe that?" "No, I don't." But, and she'd say, "Well, then how can you argue it so effectively?" I said, "You have to be able to argue both sides effectively in order to know where the weaknesses are."
Somebody had debate class.
Actually, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I did have forensics though, and that was fun.
Yeah, that's close enough to be in the same time zone.
Yeah, it was. The debate coach that the high school had ended up getting pink slipped just before I was going to take debate, and so I was like, okay.
I had no patience for it. I just wanted to call the others. I just wanted to say, anybody with a half a brain knows that those fuckers are wrong, and walk away. So I wound up over in extemporaneous speaking and poetic interp, and one act competitions and things like that, because it was much more within the realm of my tolerance zone.
Mine was in dramatic duo and comedy.
Yeah,
I love the humor ones. Those were great. When I didn't take debate, I ended up, and this is another point where you and I lived parallel lives. I went over and took English literature, and was told that I would memorize the first portion of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales.
You're damn right you would.
For the simple reason that's what my instructor had been required to do when he went to high school. So, Juan that April with a shirt of salta, the drop of marsh, it passed it to the rota. And my children still look at me funny.
And bothered every vein is wishly cool. Yep. I know. I heard it in the cradle because my mother had been compelled.
I'm sorry that you got it that early.
Oh, I'm not. I mean, it made me wonder who this interesting lady was who was feeding me every day. Nothing more than a West Virginia high school education, but my God, what she would have been even more than she was had she had the opportunity, and not had to go off and make bullets in Baltimore in the Second World War. As I began progressing toward, toward adolescence and into high school, I started hearing about how golly iest omnes divisa in partes tres, and son of a bitch, before I knew it, if I wasn't in Latin. So you'll have that.
Yep. That was another class that they decided to cut before I got to it. So I've had to pick up stuff on my own. Still using a fair amount. Just in order to, like I say, it's, I do have to.
Isn't it fun to be able to read the Latin inscriptions on buildings?
Well, it's nice to be able to do that, but you know what? This is the thing. And not too long ago, I helped one of my kids open a bank account. And they had a question, and I said, well, let's ask Mr. And I used the fellow's last name. And he said, that's quite interesting. He said, you pronounced it correctly. I said, okay, well, I'm decently schooled in being able to, suss out exactly, how a name is supposed to be pronounced. And names are important. Words are important. For as much as I dislike his politics and his positions, Rush Limbaugh had a very interesting point when I first started listening to him. Words mean things. And they do. I can't imagine that he came up with that on his own, but I do remember that that's the first place I heard it. I just look at it as, yeah, words mean things. We need to be cognizant of the words that we use. It's why, you know, frequently I'll use the word being transgender. I frequently will talk about people being ignorant. And it's not a slam against them. It's actual aspect, because
it is a comment on their absence of knowledge.
Correct. And, you know, when I've explained to people what agnostic really means, I remember coming across one person in my 20s that, well, agnostics don't believe anything. I said, no. I said, agnostic means without knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you have to go back to the root Greek where it's gnosis. And
right. And the same thing, I was in D.C. and there was a protest of some sort going on, and there were some anarchists there, and Ferg was with me, and I try to grab these little teachable moments and he goes, "Who are those?" And I said, "Those are, well, they think they're anarchists," and all of a sudden one of the little anarchists says, "Let's go," and I said, and we heard him from across the street, and I said, "They think they're anarchists, but they're not really," and Ferg said, "Why?" And I said, "Did you not hear the one little anarchist just say, 'Let's go,' and all the other little anarchists followed?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, they're not anarchists." "Okay, Dad."
"No."
"Okay, Dad, why?" I said, "Because anarchos means without leaders. He's a leader." He said, "Let's go." The other ones followed. They're following the leader. They're not anarchists.
Right.
Because a real anarchist, when the one guy said, "Let's go," the other anarchist would have said, "Screw you, buddy. We'll do what we want to do." Which is sadly too often the case, but there you go.
Just trying to push back the frontier of stupidity, ignorance, and darkness.
Well,
one,
you know, you got
to... One person at a time.
You got to... Well, you know, when it's your kid. You gotta take the little moments, and it was a fun little moment too. It was right up there with what is my favorite line from Life of Brian. And there are a lot of funny lines in Life of Brian. But my favorite moment in Life of Brian is when he flings the door open as naked as the day he was born, Graham Chapman.
Yep.
And the crowd is gathered in the street below, and they want a lesson. And he said, "Fuck off. How shall we fuck off, oh Lord?" "I don't know." And then, you know, casting about, he says, "All right, listen, you're all different." And the entire crowd yells back en masse, "Yes, we're all different. And there's one little dude in the crowd that goes, "I'm not." And to me, that is the funniest single moment in Life of Brian.
It is. It's certainly there. Oh, this is why I love you, because you make us laugh. You know, we talk about serious crap. We talk about people who hate. We talk about people who don't think, and then we're able to laugh at the world.
Y'all do as much for me as I do for you, and more. And if it was just a steady litany of grim realization of just how fucked up things are, I couldn't stand to be here, and y'all wouldn't either. So it's in some ways, I like to think of what we've accomplished in building this little community as an existential exercise. And an exercise in self-preservation. Because here's the cool part. The other side isn't having as much fun as we are.
No, they're not. And that's what, you know.
I mean, they're about as funny as hemorrhoids. Let's face it.
Yeah. I remember a year and so ago when, you know, because I talked politics a little bit to the kids, and because they're not really enthused. And with cause, I mean, what is there to be enthused about with what the current leadership is? And, I mean, they all got on board with Bernie early and stuff like that, were disappointed. And I told them, I I call both the Democratic primary and the general election. And I wasn't happy about it, but in particular when I was like, okay, we're now at the last little bit of the campaign, and now I'm seeing the flood of Hillary stuff in Michigan. Michigan's gone. I called that 2.5 weeks before the election, and everyone's like, "Oh no, no, you don't know, no." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah."
Okay, so in the couple of moments we have remaining to us, Marcy, was Michigan gone? Was that more Hillary, or was that more Michigander? Or can you make that call?
I am not intellectually pure or politically pure enough, okay? Like everybody else on this fucking planet. Because that really annoys me with the people who, you know, your purity brigade people. No one is. And if you take enough of a look at each one of them, they're not either. But the fact is, Hillary believed she was entitled. And you've been head on, absolutely right on the money with the idea of she lost the primary, you know, 8 years ago, and she shouldn't have even been a candidate. But having said that, I think it was more Hillary. I really like to think that the people of Michigan are smarter than actively picking that thing that's currently occupying 1600. Oh, and by the way, two quick things, because I know you're coming up to the end of the hour. Speaking as one trans woman, your Friday night, you know, boys' time, the jokes that you guys sometimes get with there, Sparky and everybody, that's okay, by me at least. You'll have to talk to Agnes and all the rest of the girls on your own. And I would like to, on behalf of everybody I know in Michigan, offer my profound apologies for Betsy DeVos.
Oh, Jesus. If I thought for a moment that you had any hand in it, I would accept the apology, Marcy. You don't, though, and the apology we are owed for Betsy DeVos is one, and it's a three-hour program all by itself. It's the apology that this entire nation is owed for the misunderstanding that we have of the notion of freedom of religion. Freedom of religion is a personal thing, not cultural or institutional. That's the way that the framers understood it, and that is certainly not the way that it is now understood, nor is it the way that it has been perverted in current culture. So I appreciate what you say, but if you want to, you can also apologize for Ted Nugent and Kid Rock.
Oh, well, I'm hoping to not have to do that, because there's already been talk in this neck of the woods for both of them running for the Senate.
The United States Senate?
The United States Senate.
Well, hell, Ted lives in Arizona or Texas or somewhere now, doesn't he?
I know that, but you're talking about some nutcases here in Michigan that go, "Hey, he's from here! Yay, Ted! Terrible Ted!" Really? We need terrible Ted?
Yeah, I know, and he's going to change his tone, too. I can't wait till that happens.
Well,
Maybe he could learn to play guitar. Maybe he's going to learn to play guitar like Les Paul too. But I don't see that happening either. Marcy, we do have to get out of here. But it has been a delightful conversation, and
well,
I thank you
Bob.
So much for making it, and I thank you for the patience you exhibited in waiting for it.
Not a problem, and hope to talk to you soon again.
I hope so. You take care. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And I can happily announce that thanks to Charlene, and thanks to Eric, and thanks to an anonymous contributor, we have, in fact, met John's $100 challenge for the evening, so we remain on track to get me to D.C. All we got to do is do this two more times, tomorrow and Friday. And remember, tomorrow and Friday, 2-hour program, not three, because I'll be subbing for Malloy from 9 to 11. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, all of you, for keeping this program on the air. Thank you for the precious, finite time you spend in sharing the conversation, however you do. Thank you to the all-volunteer, our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Midweek Utility Chat Room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Thanks for being in there as a moderator this evening. Texas Betsy, thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, for rebooting the server at the top of the program. That was so very, very helpful. Much appreciated. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Thank you very, very much indeed. Remember, smile.amazon.com, if you nominate Coal River Mountain Watch, a portion of your proceeds will support the work of Coal River Mountain Watch. So smile.amazon.com for those Amazon purchases. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.